those of you who were present yesterday, we did kind of run out of time. I put a few things on the board here as a sort of wrap up of some of the turf we didn't get to cover yesterday. Where we were talking yesterday, we were in the realm of the extremes on self-image, of egomania at one end and zerohood at the other. And I was moving through some possible sources of poor self-image, how come people develop it, and had gotten down into the realm of the acceptability of false humility. And the other two that we didn't touch on were, well, I briefly touched on the desirability of a poor self-image, namely saying that people oftentimes discovering that they have a poor self-image don't necessarily want to get out of it right away because it has its benefits. The last one that I didn't get to at all was the power of expectation, and that's just negative thinking, believing that the worst is going to happen, and then actually living it out. It's amazing the power and control that we people have over the environment in terms of having things work out that we want them to work. So that negative thinking people can often program the environment to have things turn out that reinforce their poor self-image. Sometimes we call one type of person in this category as an accident-prone person. The person who will literally, now this sounds terrible, that people would actually go out of their way to hurt themselves. They don't intentionally do this, but it is their unconscious that moves them in that direction to prove to themselves in the world, see, I really am a klutz, I really am a zero, I really am a nothing. Never got to how to move towards positive self-image or the balance, and so quickly listed seven possibilities for you on the blackboard. The basic, of course, is the Bible, the Word of God. You've got to listen to that, because throughout the Word of God there is clear statements. There are clear statements of our worth and our value. You read Psalm 8, or you read Matthew 5, 13, 14, where he refers to us as the light of the world, the salt of the earth. Very, very valuable commodities in his time. And Matthew 22, 39, one among many times when he says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love God first and love yourself, and then love your neighbor as you love yourself. Write out your track record of accomplishments. I've encouraged people oftentimes to go back through their history and simply write down a log of the achievements and accomplishments, no matter how small or insignificant, and to avoid putting down any of the negative stuff. And they are really amazed at the positive things that they have accomplished and simply don't think about. And then to continue that, maybe not daily, but daily isn't all that bad if you journal, to note your achievements and your accomplishments. Give yourself a certificate of merit. I brought along somewhere here. Oh yeah, here it is. This little thing that I put, it's a gimmick. There's no question about it. It's a gimmick. But if it works, go with it. And it's this little thing. It's fashioned after the diploma. It always begins, know all men, and they still say men, by these presents, whatever that means, I'm not sure. It means something in Latin that doesn't translate well into English. That Bill Miller meets all the requirements and standards for being a person of great worth, value, and merit. I really count. People sometimes, if they have the courage and live alone, will hang this on their wall. If somebody says, come on, Miller, I mean, that's a little too schmaltzy, don't you think? I'll say, well, why don't you just make a little card, make a number of little cards and say, I count, and put them in your pocket or your purse or your billfold or in your underwear drawer, your sock drawer, or wherever, so that you will visually see this. You see, what we're talking about is reprogramming ourselves, especially those of us that grew up in an environment that said to us, you're a zero, kid, you don't count, you're nothing. We need to get rid of somehow those old messages that were wrong. We believed they were right when we heard them. Yeah, we didn't know any better. Now we know better, so we can get rid of them. We can reprogram ourselves, but it takes some doing. So these gimmicks help. They help us to remember, oh yeah,
Yeah, I do count. I'm not a zero.
Abandon selective hearing. People with poor self-image tune in, just like radars, zoom, right in on negative stuff. You tell a person of poor self-image 10 statements, 9 of which are very congratulatory and 1 which is critical. And the next day, ask him or her, what were the 10 statements I told you yesterday? And they'll tell you the 1 critical statement and can't remember the 9 compliments that you gave. It's the exact converse for people with positive self-image. Tell them 1 goodie and 9 baddies, and next day they'll remember the 1 goodie and forgot the 9 baddies. Accentuate the positive. At least give equal time to it. Accept imperfection. Well, that sounds like a heck of a thing to suggest to people, but especially the people who believe that they must be perfect in order to count. It's very important. Accept imperfection. All you have to do is look at major league batting averages and realize that some of these people get paid millions of dollars for being successful only 1/3 of the time. At plate, at bat. That's what a batting average is, you know. A batting average of 333 means that the person has failed 2 out of 3 times and succeeded 1 out of 3 times. And we go around, don't we, go around beating ourselves saying, oh, I only batted 900 today. Reprogram, blot out the old messages that I've already mentioned to you. Anything real quick about yesterday? This is all for you who weren't here yesterday, probably out in left field, but that's okay. Yes?
You know what I thought after I left here? Maybe I'm older than some people here.
You probably are, yeah.
But we were raised with the idea that my parents were immigrants from Sweden, with the idea that you shouldn't have pride in yourself.
Exactly.
So when I got new clothes or something, that you weren't told that you looked nice.
Right.
Because you might...
That was it.
You might... think too much of highly of yourself. And nearly everybody I knew were the same way. Their parents were the same way. Yeah. So
you would have a lot of reprogramming to do.
Well, that's been a long time. I've long since reprogrammed.
All right.
But I think that is the way that a lot of people my age were.
It's true. Yeah. It really isn't only your age. It goes on and on and on and on. Oh, yes.
Well, I sure
probably isn't as severe now, generally speaking, in America, as it was perhaps 2 generations ago. But it's still there. Oh, yeah, it's still there. And
I was wondering, do you ever see anybody go from one extreme to the other?
Yes.
Do you?
Yes. It is possible. That's always a danger in all of this. And when we move into the stuff that we're talking about today now, shadow and persona, I'll come back to that. Because there is always that danger. It's very, very, very minimal. But there's always that danger. And we'll see it in a few minutes. Okay, so we're on the tape. Roll the tape now. My name is Bill Miller, and this is a course whose overall theme is Finding Balance in a World of Extremes. And today is the second presentation in the series. And it's titled, Out of the Darkness into the Light, How to Find a Balance Between Angelhood and Devilry in Your Perception of Yourself. For you who weren't here yesterday, this series, Finding Balance in a World of Extremes, comes out of the observation that we often realize we do live in a culture of extremes, where people live in or very close to the extremes. And we know very little of moderation. We rarely recognize that extreme in ourselves until something occurs in our life, some catastrophe, some shock, some intervention, some embarrassment. And then we are amazed, actually, at how lopsided our experience of life has been. And to strive for the abundant life, the parasos that Jesus talks about, for the Christian concept of wholeness and completeness, that teleos that Jesus also talks about, we endeavor to see every part of our life as a kind of continuum where there are the extremes of that experience at either end. And what we try to do is to find a sense of balance, to bring those opposites together
and find where our midpoint is, somewhere here, or here, or wherever, so that we have a greater sense of wholeness and completeness, wellness, emotionally, physically even, spiritually, socially. And so today now we look at, probably for me anyway, the most fascinating of all of these dimensions, and it has to do with our perception of our goodness and our not goodness. And I choose to use the words persona and shadow, or angel and devil, for the extremes. Remember Mother Goose nursery rhyme that went like this? There was a little girl who had a little curl right in the middle of her forehead. And when she was good, she was very, very good. And when she was bad, she was horrid. That essentially is the basis of the Christian doctrine of anthropology. What is the human critter? The human critter is a creation of God, capable of great good and horrible evil. Every one of us, naturally born, fits into that. And if we don't buy that, we don't buy Christianity. We like to think that we are what we appear to be. Although, lots of us, if not all of us, know that there really is more to us than meets the eye. And to try to push you into that, I'm going to give you a little test, which you can neither pass nor fail, because I'm not going to ask you to tell your answers out loud. Just either respond to them yes or no in your own head. And I guarantee you that when we finish this little quiz, you will realize that you know an awful lot more about your dark sister or your dark brother, your hidden self, than you think you know. Number one, have you ever said something to another person and then wished you could have somehow gotten the words back? Two, have you ever said something you didn't intend to say? Three, have you ever done something you had no intention of doing? Four, have you ever heard yourself say, I don't know what came over me. I just wasn't myself. It was like a dream. Five, has anyone ever said to you, boy, you sure weren't your usual self? Six, has your spouse or a close friend ever said to you, what got into you? Seven, have you ever been shocked or frightened by thoughts that passed through your mind? Have you ever wondered where they came from? Have you, number eight, ever found yourself identifying with the bad person in a movie or a play, rooting for the villain, hoping the crook gets away? Nine, have you ever been caught up in watching a sports event and heard yourself shouting vengeful, even bloodthirsty statements? My goodness, you're all stone-faced. 10, have you ever wanted to wipe out a reckless driver, a manipulative coworker, or a non-stop talker? Ah, a breakthrough. 11, have you, get this one now, have you ever been introduced to someone and then later said to yourself, I don't know what it is, but I just don't like that person. I can't put my finger on it, but I just don't like that person. 13, have you ever caught yourself daydreaming about performing unrighteous acts? My, you are stone-faced. Oh, here's a good one. 14, have you ever blamed someone else for what you knew was your fault? 15, and this doesn't get everybody, I quit. Do you have any prejudices against anyone at all. Okay, if you were able to answer yes to all 15 of those, welcome to the human race. You know a lot about your hidden self. If seriously you said no to a lot of them, you got a little bit of a getting acquainted to do with and a whole another whole dimension of yourself. And maybe we can do a little bit of that tonight. We're limited in time, but nevertheless we can scratch around the surface. Very, very early on in life, we come to a startling realization, and that namely is that we will not be able everlastingly to have our own way. Early on, I mentioned yesterday, we are absolute monarchs. You know, we scream at 2 a.m. and the whole house jumps. We have our way. The universe does indeed orbit around us, but very early on in life, we recognize that there are those out there to whom we are going to have to make an approach in order to get our needs met and our wants fulfilled, because that really is what life is all about. We have to get our needs met and our wants fulfilled some way, or else we will not survive. And so I say pretty early on, we realize that we have to make approaches to that other, and some of the approaches are going to get our needs met and our wants fulfilled, and some are not. And so, in a very rudimentary way, we figure out, because we are not dummies, you know, we figure out what it is that that other wants, and if we do it, then they'll say, nice kid, and we'll get what we want. We'll get our needs met and our wants fulfilled. If, however, we do not do and ultimately then say what that other wants, we may get punished at the worst or not get our needs met and our wants fulfilled at the least. And so, very early on in life, we learn the fine art of pretense. We learn to pretend, in a sense, to be what we in fact may not be in order to please those out there so we'll get our needs met and our wants fulfilled. And for a great many people, that continues on all the way through life. One of the neat things about midlife, the movement of the second half of life, is that we begin finally, many of us at least, to become our own woman, our own man, our own person. And what they think, say, want, demand, isn't nearly as imperative as it was in the first half of life. But holy cats, early on in life, we're constantly sniffing to see where the smoke is coming from, see which way the wind is blowing so we can bend that way. What is it you want me to do? And I'll do it. Because after all, I want to be accepted by you so that you will do what I want, need you to do. And I say, very often, that's quite contrary from what we would want to do. We are not really nice people when we are little kids. We are little monsters, you know. And we have to become civilized. Because left alone, we will be really little monsters. And there are some kids who really never get civilized and continue to be monsters forever. And so in that process of civilizing the human critter, we think we have successfully gotten rid of all of the undesirable dimensions, all the undesirable traits, at least in our culture and society, when all we've done is succeeded in pushing them back somewhere where they're not seen anymore. Whenever we teach little Joey that, Joey, if you are angry with a person, you don't walk up and kick him in the shins. You can get away with that when you're a little tot. But by the time you're 14, if you do that, you're going to end up in the clink. Or I'm going to end up paying a big fine to somebody who sues me because my kid kicked him in the shins. Now, do you think, look in your own life, do you think that Joey has now completely thrown away the desire to kick somebody who offends him in the shins? Of course not. Joey has simply learned to put on a persona, a way of acting out that will be acceptable to his culture and society and will prevent him from being thrown in the clink
or prevent his father from being sued by the guy who got kicked in the shins.
We think we have educated and sophisticated and cultivated and cultured, civilized ourselves to the extent that we believe we are what we appear to be, essentially this bright, shiny persona which we parade before everyday society. Most of us know that there's a lot more to us than meets the eye. Most of us know that there are hidden dimensions to us. Most of us realize that we do, in fact, have lots of these things going on in our lives that we don't understand where they come from. We want to be good people, whatever that means. We want to be righteous people. And we believe that we certainly are religious because we have committed ourselves to the Christ. We have been baptized, most of us. So why then aren't we? I mean, if we are indeed born again, why aren't we home free? Well, we aren't home free because no matter how many times we are born again, we still have that dark sister, that dark brother, who is as much a part of us as is the bright, shiny self that we're very familiar with. And so, what to do with shadow turns out to be a big question. We have so many of these masks, so many of these personas, we learn as little kids that you almost have to have a little red wagon to haul them all around in, because you get into one group and you put on this mask so that that behavior, those words, that posture will get your needs met and your wants fulfilled in this little group. And you move on a little further and you get into another group over here and you take that mask off and put another one on, which is a little different from the other one, so that your needs will get met, you'll be accepted and received to this little group. Have you ever been aware, if you go to a large party where there are small clusters, have you ever been aware how you may, in fact, change as you move from one cluster to another? That maybe in this little cluster, telling an off-color story will fit, and you'll be accepted and applauded. But you know, when you go to this little group to tell the same story, people will go, "My God," or will go, "Ah." Oh. And so you take the mask off that you had there and put on one that will fit over here. Sometimes you make a mistake and put the wrong mask on, and then people say, or whatever got into you, or why have you behaved that way? And so what we're up against is trying to find a balance now between this really artificial persona that we parade before the public and the potential for great and horrendous evil which resides in every one of us. We need to figure out, we need to find out, really, what's over in this, over on this side, in this hidden sister or brother. Because while we may know a lot about her or him, there's a lot about her or him that we don't know. Some of the stuff that we consciously repressed and suppressed in the process of growing up, we're in pretty close contact with that. But sometimes that has become such a habit that we don't realize that that potential lies back within us. For instance, if you grew up in an environment, in a home, in a family, where appropriately expressing anger was totally unacceptable, and you learn that if you said anything close to expressing anger, you got a smack right across the face, and you were told, "Don't you ever talk like that again, kid." You learn to take any semblance of anger and shove it way back and push it way down and put an opposite to that out front so that you would be accepted, so that you would be given what you need and what you want. So that if you grew up in an atmosphere where being loud and hilarious got you into trouble, you had to become a very quiet person. Now, does that mean your loudness and your hilarity disappeared out the window? Of course it didn't. You simply stashed it away, unconsciously. Back in the corner, down in the cellar. I like the image of down in the cellar because it's dark and dank and musty down there, and stuff that's down in the cellar gets kind of all yucky. And that's where a lot of the stuff, the not good stuff, that would naturally be a part of us, gets thrown. And we think we've gotten rid of it when all we've done is stored it down there. And it's lying around, just waiting to run up those cellar steps and crash through the persona, get us into all kinds of trouble, and cause people to say, "What came over you?" Or causes us to say, "I don't know what came over me. I wasn't myself." Or if you grew up in an environment where being very gentle got your needs met and your wants fulfilled, you have the potential of a real razor tongue back there in shadow. The way this thing works in the psyche is, in this whole concept of opposites, they're equal. So that whatever gets developed out here on the persona has an opposite dimension of equal magnitude back in the shadow, which is there, as they say in Latin, in posse, in potential. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to be coming forward sometime. All it means is that we are indeed capable, as human beings, of all sorts of terrible, nasty things. So the point of balance here is to know as much as we can about those unconscious dimensions so that we can deal consciously with them. You see, if I am able to realize and to accept that I have within me the potential of a rapist in my shadow, which is the opposite of my trying to be an accepting, inclusive person in my persona, then I can deal with that. Anytime I get signals of that possible dimension coming through, I can say, "Whoa there, boy, whoa there." But you see, if I walk around blithely saying, "Looky here now, I'm a born-again Christian, I wouldn't even think of rape," I'm the prime candidate to being overcome by that potential within me. Now think about that. And I don't expect you to accept that right off the bat, because that's pretty heavy stuff. It's really very difficult for most of us who are decent people to realize that we have the potential for horrendous indecency within us. What is frightening is to deny the potential makes us ripe to being overcome by it. Because we can't do anything at all about that of which we are unaware. There's an old saying that the devil delights in people who say there is no devil. Because there's nothing to guard oneself against then, you see. The door is wide open. How can we get a hold of some of the dimensions of our shadow? Well, I've got a half a dozen ways. This is really more than a parlor game, and so as I begin to talk with you about this, I encourage you that if any of you should choose to be serious about looking into your other hidden side, that you have a traveling companion go along with you. That you secure somebody, either a professional person, a counselor, a therapist, or a person who is knowledgeable about what you're doing, somebody who will accept you, be close to you, will not be either a leader or a follower, one who will walk with you hand in hand on this journey into self, and be prepared to support you, to hold things up for you to look at as you begin to see some of the dark shadows within yourself. It's fascinating, but it's scary. I don't think any one of us of right mind would consider the phrase, "I have within me the potential of a murderer," lightly. I really don't think we would consider that lightly. And so that's why I say, if you are of a mind to do this, you know, we can talk about this, and I can tell you the steps and all, and that's okay. But if you are ever a mind to do it, then please take my advice and find yourself a traveling companion. It's very, very important. It's hard work, because you see, what we're looking at is the reality of the self. And let's be frank, I don't really want to see myself as I truly am, to see myself as others see me. I'd much rather see myself as I like to see myself, as being, you know, a pretty okay person. To see ourselves as others see us is the very first way in. How do you find out what are the hidden dimensions of yourself? Find somebody who knows you very well. Maybe a spouse, if you're single, someone who knows you intimately, someone who has seen you operate in a wide variety of situations and experiences. And go to that person and say to that person, can you give me some feedback on how you see me? I want to do this thing that Miller was talking about up there at Holden. I want to get to see some of the hidden dimensions of myself. And he said that more often we can see other people's shadows very, very clearly, and they can't see them, and we can't see our own. Just like Jesus saying, you know, you have eyes to see, but you do not see. Unless you are extraordinary people, I think you can look back in your life and find plenty of situations where you knew someone who had a shadow dimension, as like a wart right on their nose. I mean, that big. And then, and you take them to the mirror and you say, see that wart on your nose? What wart? Can you identify with that? I think I mentioned something about chemical dependency yesterday. You take an alcoholic, a practicing alcoholic, and say, let me tell you about your shadowy side. What shadowy side? What are you talking about? You crazy or something? Now, that's where every one of us is, ladies and gentlemen. As long as we are part of the human race, none of us is exempt. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Now, who's going to do that, though? Who's going to go to one spouse of all people? Holy Moses, that's just to open the door for a lot of beating on me. You know, why am I going to go to Marilyn and say, Marilyn, what is it about me that that is quite obvious to you that I don't even see? And she's going to say, well, for one thing, I'm going to say, what do you mean I got a pretty short fuse? Oh, yeah. Like I said, this is no parlor game. This is no picnic in the park on a Sunday afternoon. One of the things that as a teacher in clinical pastoral education, my students buy into that, and they say part of the training process is for you, oh supervisor, to hold up for us to look at dimensions of ourselves that we do not see. And we want you to do that. We want to grow. Well, that's fine. The first time I do it, they get all bent out of shape and come at me defensively and attack me and say, what kind of a rat are you? You're not a very nice person. I say, but that was the deal. And they say, well, yeah, but I meant for you just to tell me the nice things about me that I don't see. I saw, yeah.
Isn't that what you're describing? Isn't that what the 12 steps, some of what the 12 step programs do?
Absolutely. Four, I guess, is the big right one. Five is the speaking it out then. Yeah, definitely. Another way, a second way in, is to examine slips of tongue and slips of behavior. What was the one in the quick quiz? Have you ever heard yourself saying something that you had no intention of saying? That's a terrible, terrible feeling, isn't it? And you say, oh, it's the last thing I wanted to say. That's not true. It's the very thing you wanted to say, and your shadow ran away with you. Instead of your persona speaking, your shadow spoke. I'm trying to think of a couple very, very funny ones. And they're not coming in. Oh, one time a person had invited to a party another person whom she did not want to invite, but this person was a dreadful bore. I mean, just a very tedious person. And she knew that if she did not invite this person, the rest of the group would say, how come Susie isn't here, or whatever. So she invited her. But when she called her to come to the party, she said, we're going to start at 8 o'clock. And the person on the telephone said, well, I have another thing to go to that evening, so I'll have to leave early. And the person, the hostess, sort of sighed a sigh of relief, saying, well, thank goodness, you'll only be here for an hour. Now, this, you see, this is the true dimension. She really does not want her there. But she is not going to say that to her, of course. So at the night of the party, whenever Susie, the bore, the tedious one, comes to the hostess and says, this is a great party, even though everybody else is going, when she's around. She comes to the hostess and she says, as I said, I'm going to have to be leaving early. And the hostess said, oh, do you have to stay? Can't you go? I mean, Well, it's too late. The cat is out of the bag, so to speak. The true message has come out. Shadow has spoken, has overcome persona, and the woman is embarrassed half to death. Sometimes people do things totally contrary to their natural behavioral pattern. Oftentimes you will see people doing crazy things, just like that. Where did it come from? I don't know. And most of the time, they want to deny that they did it. I didn't really do that. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Did I? Did I really do that? I can't believe I would do a thing like that. And people say, I don't know what came over me. I wasn't myself. So what you need to do is to look at those things whenever they happen to you. And for heaven's sakes, let's just see a show of hands. How many of you have had these things happen to you? You said something you did not intend to say. You did something you never intended to do. So you know what? You know a little bit about your shadow. Look at those things, and that will tell you something about your hidden self that maybe you didn't know before. The third one is a kind of a fun thing at the first part, but then it gets to be very, very heavy. What you do is to make a list of all the things that you do not like about other people. That's the fun part. And get a long sheet of paper. I mean, get a real long one, you know, because there's going to be a lot of them. I don't like people who are arrogant. I don't like people who pick their nose in public. I don't like people who this and that and so forth. And when you think you've got them all down, and you always can think of a couple more, then go through the list with a red pencil and underline the ones that are much more serious. They're not only things that you don't like, they're things that drive you up the wall. I mean, you just get, about. And then when you've got that list, take it off the paper and put it onto a new sheet. It'll be smaller than the original one. And look that one over and try to distill it one more time and say, you underline in a different color pencil or whatever, the things that just absolutely drive you crazy. One of the things that I can't stand, I could kill people who are so bigoted, so close-minded that they can't hear it. Things that just bring your blood pressure up. And then whenever you've done that, now comes the hard part. Because those very things are dimensions of your own shadow. Potential dimensions within your own self. And you see them so very, very clearly in other people. And you don't see them in yourself. You don't see the potential for them. One of the most common is bigotry. Another is greed. Anytime you hear anybody ranting and raving about greedy, avaricious people, I can't stand these people. Like Trump, I can't wait to see the Trump Tower go crumbling down. You got yourself a person who has a big, horrendous, avaricious shadow and doesn't know it. That's why I say the first part of the exercise is kind of fun, but then the real meat is a little difficult to swallow. And we don't, of course. You know, we will jump up and down and deny it and say, Miller, you're crazy. I'm getting out of here. I don't have to listen to this junk any longer. Okay. Okay, you know, we are our own choosers as to how we will shake out here if we'll find some kind of midpoint. But see, the person who is willing to accept that as a potential can do something about it and not be maneuvered around by this unknown sister or unknown brother, which is the way the rascal works. Being aware we can do something, being unaware we're powerless. See, number four, see whom you identify with in drama, television, movies. You know, I said in one of the statements in the quick quiz, do you ever find yourself identifying with the culprit, the villain? Do you ever find yourself at a sports event? Do you realize that at a sports event, you can get away with behavior that anywhere else in the world you get locked up for? Absolutely. You want to see a lot of shadow dimensions being lived out? Go to a football, go to a hockey game. Go to a hockey game, yeah. Where was it? It was a brawl and a hockey match broke out. We went to a brawl. That's it. We went to a brawl and a hockey match broke out. That's what it is. The fifth possibility is to look, and this is a little more difficult. Look into your dreams and your daydreams and your fantasies. Now you want to say to me, I don't dream and I don't have time to daydream or fantasize. And I say to you, wrong on all three accounts. You dream considerably every night, and if you ever set your mind to remembering your dreams, you will be amazed at how much you will remember. And don't tell me you don't fantasize or daydream. You all do. We all do. Every one of us. What do you think about when there is nothing to think about? Where does your mind go? Have you ever had these experiences like that? One question in the quick quiz. Sometimes I am frightened and amazed by things that come through my mind. I have no idea where they came from. They're passing. They'll shoot in and out. And part of the whole process of resisting temptation is not to embrace them and hang on to them. You know, we have all kinds of fantasies. And again, you can deny that if you wish. That's your prerogative. But it will do you no good to deny it. What you need to do is take a look at it. Pause and examine it and say, wow, you know, just for a moment that shot through my head, I could just take the money and run and nobody would be the wiser. Now, I don't want to do that. And you see, the very person who will say, I never experienced temptation, not me, that's the person who is ripe to being overcome by the temptation to steal. I know you want to say, that doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. People are constantly saying to me, Miller, you get people stirred up into looking into their dark potential, and you're going to have all kinds of actors, outers. Now that's one possibility, coming back to your observation, and we'll get to that in a minute or two. And I'd be a fool to say it isn't a possibility. And I'd be a greater fool to say that we'd be better off if we pretended that none of that stuff was there. That's what really gets us into trouble. The last one I hinted at, the sixth way of getting acquainted with a hidden brother or sister, is have you ever met someone whom you didn't like and didn't know why? There's another old Mother Gooser that goes, I do not love thee, Dr. Fell. The reason why, I cannot tell. But this I know. And know full well, I do not love thee, Dr. Fell. Well, it doesn't matter who Dr. Fell is or anything like that. It's just that matter of, for some reason or other, I don't like that person. I can't put my finger on it, but there's something I don't like about him or her. Well, what the something is something that I have within my own self and refuse to see. But it's close enough to the surface that whenever I see it in him, there's some kind of a click that goes on, some kind of a connection. But it's enough below the surface that I can't identify it. There's enough of my persona that wants to disallow it. And so I say, I don't know what it is. So what we need to do is to find somebody who knows both of us and can say, I know the reason why you don't like her. And I say, well, what is it? And then the person who knows us both says, well, she is a person of short temper. And I say, by George, that's right. How'd you guess that? And then he says to me, well, you know, Bill, you're a person of short temper too. It is absolutely amazing and absolutely fascinating what we can find out about ourselves that way. I skipped over dreams real quickly because it's a little more involved there. Shadow dimension always appears in our dreams as a unclear, very difficult to distinguish frightening sense of being. He's usually a very dark, shadowy figure, and an undesirable, disgusting, and we want to get away from it in the dream. We're always wanting to run away from shadow in the dream. So anytime you find yourself wanting to run away from some dimension of your dream, probably that dimension is a shadow dimension of yourself. Then you have to take a look at what that shadow is doing. And that will help you to get another glimpse of this hidden brother or sister. Now, supposing that we do have a pretty good picture of shadow, our own shadow, what can we do with it? We have four choices. And one is the one that you were talking about earlier, sir. We can identify with it, live it out, and become it. And the classic illustration of that is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The original version. There have been so many people who have adulterated it with modern versions of it. But go back and read the original Robert Louis Stevenson, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And you see the clear shift from persona into a living out of the worst potential of shadow, which is homicide. And you see the good doctor who has been the epitome of goodness and charity in this town for year after year after year, who one day says to himself, hey, there's got to be more to life than this. And the symbolism that Stevenson has, of course, is that he makes this potion. And he takes a little bit of the potion and he experiences a little bit of the opposite side and says, hey, that ain't all that bad. And takes a little more and a little more, and finally he doesn't even need the potion anymore to live out the demonry within him, to live out his devil. And he actually ends up committing murder. To identify with shadow is the worst of all possibilities. Sometimes it happens. The second possibility is to deny its existence. To say, no, indeedy, there is nothing beyond what you see. This stuff that you're talking about, Miller, is a bunch of hooey. It is this modernism, this psychology crap or whatever. I am a true believer in Jesus Christ as my own personal savior. I have buried the old man, drowned the old woman, crucified the flesh, and on and on and on, and I am what I appear to be. Look out. That is the person who is most ripe, as I said earlier, to being overcome by shadow. If you can think back in your experience of reading about people who seemed to have gone berserk and have mowed down people from trees or from dormitory windows on college campuses with machine guns, or who have chopped up their parents or whatever. You know these stories that appear from time to time, these real catastrophes, these real horror stories. Very, very often, if not in fact always, you read that the person was an exemplary character, outstanding. Oftentimes a religious person, taught Sunday school, sang in the choir, went to mass every morning. In the case of a young person, an adolescent, a young adult, just an outstanding person, never gave the parents any trouble, just an ideal kid. And oftentimes the reports will say, neighbors who knew the perpetrator of the crime were amazed. And they say, I can't believe that John would have done such a thing, or that Mr. Smith would have done such a thing, or that Mrs. Murphy would have stabbed her husband right in the chest. I don't believe that. And people say that because they don't want to believe. We don't want to believe these things. We don't want to believe that there is within every one of us a potential for this. We like to think that all of the atrocities committed by the Nazis were done by crazy people. No, they weren't. They were done by people really like you and me, for whom the devil became the angel, for whom that became the norm. Because they didn't want to accept the fact that there is indeed a balance that can be found. But that's the thing that we go for. So to deny the existence or the presence of shadow is a very, very, very dangerous thing, because then it makes you vulnerable simply to be overcome by it. And whereas we might, in some society situation, say something we did not intend to say, that's probably the lowest possibility on the scale. When the power of shadow comes breaking through, ain't nothing gonna stop it. And for a person to act it out by chopping up his mother with an axe or shooting college students from a window, it's just the same as trying to stop the lava coming out of Mount St. Helens. And you see how those giant trees, those giant pines, were just wiped out like they were toothpicks. That's the way it is. That's scary. I don't mean to scare you. Or maybe I do mean to scare you. I don't know. But that's not my point. My point is that there's much more to this than meets the eye. So that the better acquainted we can become with our dark sister, our dark brother, the better able we are to control him, to control her. To say, yes, I know you are there, and I know you want front stage, but I'm going to tell you something. While I respect your power, you have to know that the power of light is greater than the power of darkness. And I am in cahoots, you see, with the Son of God. And between the two of us, you don't stand a chance. Third thing you can do with shadow is to project it. And that's nice. I can throw my darkness over onto you and say, you're the rat, not I. And you're the greedy one, not I. And you're the bigot, not I. And we do that so much. Why, said Jesus, why do you go over to your brother and you say, oh, brother, let me take that big hunk of a log out of your eye? No. That's what he says. No, he says, why do you go to your brother and you say, let me take that little bitty speck of sawdust out of your eye when you have this big hunk of a log in your own eye? This is exactly what he's talking about, the projection of shadow. How do we do that? I can be the biggest scoundrel in terms of bigotry, and I can go to you and say, how dare you say what you just said about black people? And be totally blind to my own bigotry. A lot of projection happens in marriages. A lot of projection happens between parents and children. Children are marvelous receivers of our own dark side. We can just project our own clumsiness onto our kid. You know, you walk into a room and trip over the chair and you say to the kid, now look what you made me do. We project even onto inanimate objects. You ever done that? You ever kicked your car when it wouldn't start? A miserable car. Oh yeah. Husbands and wives projecting on each other all the time. The blacker I can make her look, the whiter I will appear. And the blacker she can make me appear, the whiter she will appear. The fourth possibility is the only one, and that is to find some way to embrace this dark sister, this dark brother. Remember when Jesus is talking with the disciples who are going out now to do the ministry, he says to them, behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Remember that? He's no dummy. He knows what's going on out there because he's been out reconnoitering, see? And it ain't selling. It ain't selling at all. In fact, people are getting very upset with him. They're getting all bent out of shape. They call him nasty names. They say, by what authority do you stand up in the temple and speak? They get real peeved. And they throw stones at him. And one time, they even try to throw him over the edge of the cliff. So he says to them, if you're going to make it, I don't want you to become like that. I don't want you to become a wolf.
What you have to do,
and who remembers what he says? I send you out as sheep in the midst of a pack of wolves, therefore be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Okay, so we've got serpents and doves. Everybody knows what serpents are. Serpents are bad news. The very word that he uses in that Matthew text is the same word that is used in the book of Revelation, St. John the Divine, to describe that great serpent that was thrown out of heaven. And you know who that is? Satan. It's the same word. So can you believe this? I mean, I'm not kidding you. I'll go get the Greek lexicon if you have any doubts. He is actually saying, you must be wise as the devil himself or herself. At the same time as innocent as a dove. Like butter wouldn't even melt in your mouth. You're that pure and guileless. You have to be them both. I can't think of a pair of opposites more profound than those two. And he says, if you're going to make it, you are going to have to bring these two together and find a midpoint between them. Because if you go out just like doves, saying, here's the good news, they're going to throw you over the hillside. They tried to do that to me. And if you go out just as the wily, crafty serpent saying, I'm going to figure out some way that you're going to believe or you're going to end up in hell, then you are no different than they, he says. And so somehow, some way, you have to find a method of bringing these two together so that you will be wise and crafty and shrewd and subtle as the devil himself, but at the same time as innocent as the Spirit of God. And so that's what this is all about, of bringing these opposites together. And so what we do is to not get too bent out of shape whenever we find these potentials for horrible things within shadow. Suppose we find the potential for great arrogance back there. In all likelihood, we've got some false modesty up here in a persona that isn't really all that authentic. Remember, personas are masks. We have to have them. We can't be bulls in china shops. We can't be anarchists doing forever what we want to do. So we have to have the persona. But we find a way to bring these opposites together. If we find, supposing we find real laziness back there in shadow, I mean, just flat on the back 24 hours a day. I mean, that's a good balance out for compulsiveness. It's up here in persona. And my suggestion is that no matter whatever you find over here in shadow, you can find something within it that can be brought forward to balance out something in persona. Always look for the good in that which appears to be bad. And always look out for the bad in that which appears to be good. You can bet your life that there is virtue in vice, and there is vice in virtue. Nothing is absolute. One last shot. Don't forget, too much morality is as bad as too little morality. Now, I forgot to tell you at the beginning that this is a discuss-as-you-go course. I did forget to do that. See, shadow was at work. So here we are, and I didn't give you a chance for any discussion. That's terrible. I apologize for that sincerely. Is there anything? There's so much in this. And I get so caught up in it myself as I'm doing it. It's such vital stuff. Yeah?
Just one real quickie thought that came to mind. When you're talking about finding your shadows, and you suggested either a professional person or a confidant or a friend.
Yeah.
I think it's real important in that friend or whatever you want to call it, to remember the perspective from which they're coming from, even though they're your maybe dearest, trusted, you know, whatever you see them, that they come from a certain perspective also.
Right.
And that's where I think you still have to use your own intuitions and good sense when you hear what they say to you about, please feed back to me.
This is the touchiest part of it all. It really is. You put your finger on it. And I don't know, as I continue to do this, the more I do it, the more I wonder if I should even offer that, because you put your finger right on it. It's such a struggle, because we resist so violently any perceiving of this stuff ourselves. And I know, I mean, I speak from my own experience. And unless you have somebody who is almost like a blank slate, a tabula rasa, a clear slate, which a professional person must have, it's risky. But not everybody wants to spend the time and the money to do that. And so I'm kind of torn, but you make a very clear, a very valid observation, yes.
And a good way is to avoid that is to use your dreams.
Yes.
And it really, I mean, there is no faking. I mean, it's really
you're right.
Come from your
mind. You can fool it. Yeah, you can say.
Dreams?
Oh yeah, you can say that isn't what the dream is saying to me. If you don't want to see yourself.
Well, if you don't want to, but if you're serious about it and want to learn about yourself, I think it's a wonderful way.
This is true. Yeah.
The problem is you don't get much sleep if you write down your dreams.
Yeah, you leave the pad by your night table, and you learn to write in the dark. And just put all you need to do really is put down a few words, and when you waken, the dream will come back. And the dreams are a great potential, but you do oftentimes need some help in the interpretation, at least at the beginning. Yes, yes sir.
Another way, and this is my personal experience, is if you have the opportunity to go to seminars, either through work or church or whatever, and you can go to those away from anyone that you know. So you go, you come into a room, you don't know anyone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you say, okay, I don't know anyone, I'm going to drop my mask and observe the kind of person that is projected.
Right.
And Holden's a great place to do it, because normally you don't come up here with your congregation, or you come up here with only a few people that you know, and you go to things that are away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And then just look at yourself, just be, drop your mask, be what you want to be, and observe it at the same time.
Yes?
What do you do with your behavior when you find yourself not satisfactory to yourself?
Try
when you recognize this, you see this there, and you say this is unsatisfactory behavior, then what happens next?
See if there isn't a way to balance that out with its opposite behavior. See if you can do it yourself. Now that you know what the undesirable dimension is, see if there is a way that you can learn to blow the whistle on yourself when you start to get into that, and see if you can start to act out its opposite or somewhere in between.
Well, you said earlier that this Jesus and you had more power than this other side did.
That's right.
How does that work?
I think, in my own experience, the power of prayer and meditation to help me resist the temptation to act out shadow dimensions is the most powerful thing that I have. If I think I can do it on my own, I'm probably not going to make it, because there's too much in me that wants to stay where I am.